Our next presenter is Ms. Robin, and I did not ask you how to pronounce your last name.
Deweese.
I was going to be very close. Robin is a doctoral student at Arizona State University, and her research has been done at looking how the built environment impacts eating and physical activity behaviors. You need to come to South Texas and do some research. She's also published on the impact perceptions of the neighborhood environment have on active commuting to school by students, and lots of other stuff. I'll let Robin continue her introduction.
Thanks. We'll all be talking about This works now. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Sounds echoey. I'll be talking about active commuting to school as a strategy to prevent overweight and obesity in youth. My co-author on this is my doctoral mentor, Dr. Poonam Mourivacispati. And I have no relationships to disclose. So first, as I go through this, I'll be talking about some of the health benefits of active commuting and why we care about it beyond just the fact that it's going to reduce the pollution in the air. And then about the numbers of students who actively commute currently compared to about 40 years ago. Then I'll go into the analysis that this is based off of, the New Jersey Childhood Obesity Study, and what we found about the association between active commuting to school and weight outcomes in children, and then just some policy implications and how we might be able to increase active commuting among students. The commute to school accounts for 22% both of total trips and of time spent traveling by 5 to 18-year-olds. So they spend a substantial amount of their commuting time just going to and from school. And there's lots of evidence to suggest that students who actively commute to school have higher daily physical activity than those who don't, and that they are more likely to meet the physical activity recommendations. Which is why we care about active commuting to school, because if it increases physical activity, there's cross-sectional studies, randomized control trials, epidemiological studies show that in children, physical activity improves blood pressure, the metabolic syndrome, cholesterol, blood lipids, and even health into adulthood, most of that being bone health. The recommendations for physical activity in children is that they accumulate 60 or more minutes of moderate or vigorous activity each day, but only 42% of 6 to 11-year-olds actually achieve that goal, and by the time they reach adolescence, that number drops to only 8%. Now, we all know how students used to get to school. Of course, they walked in snow up to their eyeballs or so, uphill both ways, and they were happy about it. So it turns out part of that story was true, that we've been told all of our childhood. That would be the walking part. Because in 1969, every 5 to 10 years or so, the U.S. Department of Transportation conducts the National Household Travel Survey to assess the travel patterns among Americans. So this survey in 1969 revealed that almost half of students actively commuted to school. 40 years later, that number had dropped to less than 13%. So the 2010 White House Task Force on Childhood Obesity recognized the daily commute to school as a strategy to increase physical activity among children. So they put forth this recommendation to increase by 50% by 2015 the percentage of children ages 5 to 18 taking safe walking and biking trips to and from school. So we wanted to know, will active commuting to school affect childhood obesity? So our research question was, is there an association between active commuting to school and weight outcomes in a low-income, high-minority urban population? So when you look at the literature, the answer to that is it depends on the population, it depends on the methods used. Ford and colleagues did a cross-sectional study in elementary school students in England, and they had the kids wear accelerometers, and put them into either a walking group or a car group. The car group just habitually rode by car, and the walk group had to walk over 3 days per week, and the commute had to take at least 10 minutes. And you can see that their activity counts were significantly different before and after school. This would be during the walking to and from school portion. So the walking group had about 983 counts, car group 762 or so. That was significant. But when you look at how that affected percent body fat and fat mass, it didn't seem to make any difference. Then other studies show some association. This was a longitudinal study that adjusted for quite a few covariates, as you can see down here. And one of the associations they were looking for in their study was just whether or not the average number of days that students actively commute makes a difference, affects overweight or obesity. And you can see that they found that in students who actively commute an average of more than 3.5 days had an odds ratio quite a bit lower than those who never actively commuted for being obese. But none of the other associations seemed to make a difference. And then Helan et al. Conducted a study among elementary and middle school students in Nebraska, and this was one of the few studies that actually had objectively measured distance to school. So they only used elementary schools that lived at a half mile or less from school. Middle school students could live a mile from school. Those are the distances that they considered walkable in those age groups. So among elementary school students, they didn't find that there was any correlation between BMI Z score and either the frequency that they walked or the distance that they walked. Middle school students, kind of the same. They didn't find an association between BMI Z score with the frequency that the students walked, but they did find an inverse association with the distance. And remember that they could have walked a mile. The elementary school students could only walk a half mile. Otherwise, they just didn't include them. So our analysis was based on the New Jersey Childhood Obesity Study. This was conducted in 2009-10. It was a random digit dial survey of 1,408 households done in four low-income cities in New Jersey. That's why it's called the New Jersey Childhood Obesity Study. These cities were Newark, New Brunswick, Camden, and Trenton. The households had to have at least one child between the ages of 3 and 18 in the household, and the survey was based on one randomly selected index child. The respondent was the adult in the household who made most of the food shopping decisions, and this was almost always it was about 90% of the time it was the parent of the child. The survey questions included questions on demographics, eating and physical activity behaviors, heights and weights, which the parent measured. Part of that came later after the survey. Method of getting to school, and then distance to school was based on geocoding, which I'll talk about in just the next few slides. So weight status was our outcome variable. Like I said before, the parents weighed and measured their children for us to obtain BMI Z scores. They were mailed tape measures with instructions based on CDC guidelines and then worksheets. So they weighed and measured their kids, sent back the worksheets, and then we dichotomized them into either normal weight, which is lower than the 85th percentile, overweight or obese, greater than or equal to the 85th percentile. And then to obtain the active commuting variable, the question asked, on how many days during a typical week does the child walk, bicycle, or skateboard to or from school? And the responses were bimodal, with almost all children answering either 0 days per week or five days per week. So we dichotomized that into either one or more days per week or never. Other studies on active commuting to school have done this same thing, both with the question asked and the dichotomization of that variable. And then, like I said, distance to school was calculated in roadway network miles by geocoding the home and school addresses of the children. And then this distance, computed a distance traveled variable. We took, commuters, yes or no, yes being one, no equals zero, times distance in tenth of a mile from home to school, and that gave us this distance traveled variable. And this is how we got our sample sizes. We started with 1,408 children in the study, and then height and weight worksheets were returned on 485 students. 40 of those had biologically implausible values, according to the CDC, and 40 of those were under 5 years old. We were just using, school age, so we eliminated those. And then the two models we used that had all of the variables, and the one where we didn't include distance, we had 337, and the one where distance was included, we had a sample of 250. These are our descriptives. So this column shows all students, all 405. This one is those who actively commute. This is those who don't actively commute. So you can see the continuous BMI Z-score, and when it was categorized, there was no difference between active commuters and non-active commuters. You can see that over a third of the sample was in the overweight or obese category. And then, again, the columns are the same here. The average age is about 11 and a half, and the active commuters are a little bit older than the non-active commuters, both continuous and in and when it's categorized. There was no difference between gender. Also no difference in race, ethnicity, but you can see this was a very low minority population and also very low income. 72% were less than 200% of the federal poverty level, and also those in the lower income group were more likely or actively commuted more than those in the higher income. About half and half with active commuting. And the mean distance was 1.22 miles. That was significantly different among commuters versus non-active commuters. Less than a mile for those who commuted, a little over a mile and a half for those who didn't actively commute. This illustrates pretty well what happens as students get farther from school, as the distance increases. With the exception of this is less than a tenth of a mile, but there were only seven students. But besides that, you can see with each increase in a quarter of a mile, fewer and fewer students actively commute. Once you get to over 1 mile, the percentage was about 33% among all of those students. And then once it was over 2 miles, the numbers were so low that the percentages didn't make that much sense anymore. So this is what we found. When we looked only at whether or not the students actively commuted, just yes or no, the association was not significant with whether or not they would be overweight or obese. But there seemed to be a dose response with distance. When we used that distance traveled variable, the odds ratio was 7% lower with each additional tenth of a mile that students actively commuted that they would be overweight or obese. So then we wanted to determine, and by the way, I should mention, this is multivariate analysis where we controlled for all these covariates. Total screen time per week was used. We also had days per week that they accumulated 60 more minutes of activity, but when that was added into the model, the sample size went down, the results didn't change, so I chose screen time, and then dietary habits was fruits and vegetables, sugar-sweetened beverages, and fast food consumption. So we wanted to see if there was a certain distance threshold that had to be met for these associations to be observed. So before I talk about that, let me show you where that kind of came from. This is the bivariate analysis. Oh, I forgot to put the star on. So in those who did not actively commute at all, so their distance was zero, 40% of those who didn't actively commute were overweight or obese. 47% of those who actively commuted a half mile or less, now these are those who actively commuted, this isn't just lived, they actively commuted a half mile or less, 47% of those were overweight or obese, and about 24% of those who actively commuted over a half mile were overweight or obese. This is significantly lower than either of these two. So based on that, we used a half mile as our distance threshold to examine whether there was a distance threshold, and found that in those who commuted a half mile or less, there was no association between overweight and obesity. Those who actively commuted over a half mile, the odds ratio was significantly lower for them to be overweight or obese. This is just cross-sectional analysis, so you can't assess directionality, but it is a place to start. So the conclusion is commuting distance is inversely associated with overweight and obesity, but this observation may only hold when a certain distance threshold is met. So what are the policy implications about this? We know through many interventions that the interventions do increase active commuting to school, especially walking school buses. Now the question is, do the distances need to be increased? So some of the things that can be used to increase those distances are minimum busing distance policies, which some states have, some school districts have. That means you have to live at least a certain distance away in order to be able to ride the bus. If those are sometimes those are less than a mile, if those can be increased to at least a mile, then that would at least take away one other option for non-active commuting that students have. Those could be combined with remote bus stops or walking school buses. So instead of the bus dropping the students off just at the front door, you know, maybe you put a bus stop like a half mile from school, then the walking school bus could be used where an adult walks the rest of the way with the students to school. There are some schools, there's at least one school in Canada that opened as a walk-to-only school in 2009. They have lots of bike racks. They made sure their sidewalks were built away from the street. They have no stopping zones in front of the schools so that, you know, to discourage parents from driving their kids. And then another one, just no student parking lots in high schools would discourage the high school students from driving since they would have nowhere to put their car. And that would be uncomfortable. Put it in. Anyway. So these policies have been shown to work, not necessarily these particular policies, but walk-to-school policies. So it does look like it's something, it's not one of those controversial things where people are like, well, I don't know if kids should walk to school or not. So if schools, states can put in some of these, that it might be possible to increase the number of students who do walk and increase health. So some acknowledgments. The funding for this, the data collection for this study came from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. My travel funding was provided by the ASU Graduate and Professional Student Association and the John Elizabeth Ainsworth Award. And come check out our booth at the ASU College of Health Solutions. It's number 915. It's a really great school, and they might give you candy. I don't know if they have candy or not. Okay, that's all.
We've got time for a couple of questions.
It must just be particular. I haven't heard of it, so
okay.
I don't know.
Maybe.
So I know that sometimes with Safe Routes to School, they do those kinds of promotions. I didn't mention Safe Routes to School, but they do have a lot of different promotions. I saw a hand in the very back.
Yeah, I just have a question where they're doing a talk about the data you looked at was from urban center data. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Have thought about how they can be translated. Because the data is from very different environments
right.
than where they're creating those types of policies that have been able to be tapped.
Yeah, that's one of those things that it has to be tailored for the particular school. None of these are going to work in every school. I mean, you know, and there's also the rural schools, which... are out in the middle of cow fields, and you're not going to, nobody's going to walk to those schools. So you have to, it would have to be tailored, yeah. It would depend on the spot you're at, so, yeah.
Did you consider looking at distance walk or whether or not they did walk and school success?
We didn't look at that, no. Anything else?
Sorry, one other question about the map.
Say that again.
So the mapping system you use, the geomapping system that you use, did you use only existing roads, or did you also map pathways through parks and commons?
It was roadway network distance, so it was roads.
Thank you.
You mentioned other predictors like social consumption, screen time. Were there any particular findings related to that?
No, it wasn't. No. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.